We're getting ready for International Observe the Moon Night, this week on Planetary Radio. I'm Sarah Al-Ahmed of the Planetary Society, with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. On October 4th, people around the globe will step outside to observe our nearest celestial neighbor. I'll talk with Stacey Horvath, Outreach Coordinator at NASA Goddard Solar System Exploration Division and Director of International Observe the Moon Night, and Teresa Summer, Astronomy Educator at the Astronomical Society of the Pacific, about the history, impact, and resources for this worldwide celebration. We'll also hear from Kate Howells, Public Education Specialist at the Planetary Society, about her new book called Moons, The Mysteries and Marvels of Our Solar System. And then I'll join Planetary Society Chief Scientist Bruce Betts for What's Up. We'll discuss moon features that you'll be able to spot from Earth with the naked eye during this upcoming event. If you love Planetary Radio and want to stay informed about the latest space discoveries, make sure you hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcasting platform. By subscribing, you'll never miss an episode filled with new and awe-inspiring ways to know the cosmos and our place within it. Every year, millions of people around the world gather for International Observe the Moon Night. It's a global celebration of our nearest celestial neighbor. The Planetary Society has been proud to collaborate with this event for several years. It's sponsored by NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter mission and coordinated by the Solar System Exploration Division at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, which provides the moon maps, activity guides, and live broadcasts that make the celebration possible. This year's festivities take place on and around Saturday, October 4th, and today's show is going to help you get ready, whether that means prepping your binoculars and telescope or teaching you how to throw your very own moon-themed party. I'm joined by Stacey Horvath, Outreach Coordinator for NASA Goddard and Director of International Observe the Moon Night. We're also joined by Teresa Summer, Astronomy Educator at the Astronomical Society of the Pacific. Teresa helps lead outreach through programs like the Night Sky Network and Confidence and Curiosity Girls at the Telescope, creating opportunities for people of all ages and backgrounds to connect with the moon and with science. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
I mean, every year I love to participate in International Observe the Moon Night. I love this idea of everyone on Earth being able to observe the moon together as one group, right? And I love that NASA has dedicated this time to it. Stacey, since you're the director of International Observe the Moon Night at NASA Goddard, can you give us an idea of what this event is and why does NASA dedicate this global night to the moon each year?
Yes, I would love to. So I'm the newly minted program director after our amazing former director, Andrea Drones, handed me the reins. It's a big, big shoes to fill. But International Observe the Moon Night is an annual worldwide public engagement program that celebrates the moon. So the name itself is actually a bit of a misnomer and is definitely too long. But this is a day, not necessarily just a night, where people around the world come together to learn about lunar science and exploration, to take part in the celestial observations, and then to honor personal and cultural connections to the moon. It's also a great opportunity for NASA to share what's been happening in the lunar realm with people all around the world. And I don't know if you guys are aware, but there's been a lot going on. So we're going back to the moon with Artemis, with global partners, and with commercial partners. So it's definitely an exciting time, and there's no shortage of content. And I would definitely dedicate every day to moon observing, but that's just me.
I mean, it's always a good time to go out and look up at the moon, if the weather is permitting. I know it's the astronomer's curse. Anytime you're looking at the moon, it's going to be cloudy or foggy or something. But now does feel like a very special time to be involved in lunar science, especially with Artemis and the Artemis Accords bringing people together around the world. Now is a really great time for us to spotlight that because so many nations are joining on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Teresa, from your perspective at the Astronomical Society of Pacific and, you know, as someone who develops resources for this event, what makes the moon such a powerful tool for inspiring people for connection and curiosity about space?
You know, the Astronomical Society of the Pacific has been around since 1889. So it's a long history, but our mission includes the words that ASP brings the universe to you. So having this personal connection with astronomy is really important for the ASP. And we all have like our favorite moon memory. And whether that was watching the Apollo astronauts land on the moon, or whether the moon seemed to follow us home when we were kids at night car rides, or sometimes lighting up a lake or a nature scene at night, like the moon has been part of our lives. And this personal connection is what makes the moon like a very powerful tool for igniting curiosity and inspiration. And that curiosity is what leads to seeking knowledge and understanding of the universe. Plus, the moon is just beautiful and it's so engaging.
Yeah, I always think of the moon as kind of like almost a space gateway drug, right? Like no matter where you live on Earth, even if you live in a city like I do in LA, you can still see it. And I lament all the time that people have lost this connection to the broader universe because of light pollution. But the moon is always there as a way to get people engaged. So I feel like that's a really powerful entry point.
Agreed. Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth about the global power of the moon and the lack of light pollution as an issue.
Yeah, it's one of those things where usually when it's a space event, people are going to ask me to go out to the desert or something. And that's a big activation energy. But this is a small one. You can literally just step outside or even look at your computer.
Yep. And you can be in like New York City and still see the moon. It doesn't matter if you're in a light polluted sky. And we always like to say we start with the moon and then go on from there to explore other places in our solar system and beyond. So it's a nice gateway point.
How did International Observe the Moon Night actually begin? And from that beginning, how did it spin out into this event that now reaches millions of people around the world?
So I wish I would have been present for the origin story of this program, but it's actually quite fun. So the initial idea came way before I started at NASA Goddard, but I've heard that the beginnings originated with an idea in a bar. As all good things come. The initial thought was to celebrate the arrival of two NASA spacecraft at the moon in 2009. So that was the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter and the LCROSS missions. So the program started small at a couple of NASA centers, but has since grown to become one of NASA's biggest public engagement programs, annually engaging roughly like 1 million people around the world, which is insane. But the growth actually is because of the work of our supporters, you know, like the Planetary Society, networks, digital teams, so many people that we collaborate with worldwide. And we're trying to share the program out in as many places as we can. So that initial small idea has since launched into this great endeavor that we call International Observe the Moon Night.
And it happens each year around this first quarter moon time at the beginning of October. Why is that the time that was chosen for this event?
A lot of people don't know that the full moon isn't the best time to see the features on the moon because it's so bright and it can be difficult to look at. It's even painful in telescopes, I'm sure you've noticed, right? So the first quarter moon, it rises around noon, it's highest in the sky and right at sunset, and then it sets around midnight. So it's wonderful timing for doing events. It's high in the sky, it makes excellent viewing opportunities. Also with a quarter moon, there's a thing called the Terminator line. Probably some of your listeners have heard about it, but it's the line that's between the bright and dark sides of the moon. And when you look there, especially if you use binoculars or a small telescope, you can really see the lunar features. So the contrast shows the moon's topography really well. There's mountains and craters, and you can see the depth in the Marias. It's just much more visibly clear. So it's great for looking up and observing at that time.
And I'll just clarify, it's not, so International Observe the Moon Night's always around September or October, not necessarily in October. We're trying to actually transition to more September in the future, but it's always around those 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also want to share that while most people are going to be participating on October 4th this year, I understand there's some wiggle room depending on where you live in the world,
yes,
because there are all kinds of cultural events that are going on around that time.
Yes, we do. We offer flexible programming because we do indeed try to, you know, make it easy for people all around the world to participate, knowing full well that there are a lot of different cultural holidays from people in different countries. So we open registration for a week before and after that normal October 4th date. So if you need to host an event on September 30th, that's completely fine. You can still go ahead and register, and we'd love to have your participation.
I love that this event emphasizes not just the science of the moon, but also the culture behind it. People around the world have all these wonderful mythologies and stories and different ways to connect to the moon. Can you share examples of how you've seen those cultural connections expressed through this event?
You know, that's funny. The ASP and the Night Sky Network and the International Observe the Moon Night created a calendar called Celebrate Our Marvelous Moon 2025, right? And it's a cultural events connected with the moon. But many cultures still use the lunar calendar, even though in the West we use the one based on the sun. So a lot of religious holidays like Ramadan, Rosh Hashanah, Easter, they all have their dates that when they're set on the moon. Also, there's a lot of indigenous cultures and even the Farmer's Almanac that use the moon cycles for planting, harvesting, celebrations. So that poster shares some of those events. And we're hoping to make one for 2026, depending on funding and how that works out. But that calendar shares a lot of things, including our June 20th event of landing on the moon. So there's a lot of culture that is connected with the moon.
Yeah, one of my favorite things every year, because some people may know my family comes from the Middle East, but whenever Ramadan is coming on, I love the messages I get from my friends and family around the world of like, I spotted the moon, right? It's such a beautiful way for people to connect with that.
Yeah, and there's also the Chinese, one of the big holidays after the Lunar New Year is the Observe the Moon night that they have, which is on the 6th this year, so right after our holiday. So a lot of times during International Observe the Moon Night, there'll be mooncakes for sale.
Right? I love that they named the Chang'e missions to the moon after the lunar goddess. Like it's yeah. There's so much beautiful mythology there. And I really encourage people to learn more about it because it gives such a deeper way to connect. And also you start seeing these stories in so much of the media that we consume, right? There's so many ways that it's woven in that you'll start spotting once you know. But just in case anybody wants to see this, I'm going to put a link for this on the webpage for this episode at planetary.org/radio, along with all the resources we're going to be talking about so that you can actually engage with all these things. Beyond that, this is also a wonderful moment for us to use this to teach more about what's going on in lunar science right now. I've spoken with a lot of people that are like, well, we went to the moon over 50 years ago and we just didn't do anything after that. But actually, we have so many missions, both at NASA and around the world, that are going to the moon and investigating it right now. So what are some of the lunar updates that you would like participants to hear more about during this event this year?
We actually have a dedicated page for lunar news from the past year on our website, but I'll just share a few of those here, some of my favorites. So there's been a lot of work going on in preparation for NASA's Artemis missions to the moon. So people will learn more about how we're training astronauts out in the field to make sure they're ready for their moon missions, how we've selected scientific instruments to head to the moon on future missions, how we're working with other space agencies to advance different Artemis capabilities, and so on. And there was actually a recent article that came out discussing moonquakes, which will be important to understand for humans on the lunar surface. And that came about from studies from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. So there's a lot of different lunar science things that are going on. But I also wanted to give a plug for something that's not necessarily lunar science focused, but it's still really fun. So earlier this year, there was a call for people all around the world to contribute their ideas to the Artemis 2 zero gravity indicator, which will fly with the mission's crew around the moon and back next year. So the zero gravity indicator is a small plush item that typically rides with a crew to visually indicate when they're in space. And just a couple of weeks ago, the 25 finalists were announced, and their designs are very entertaining and very creative. So if you have some time, I highly recommend checking out the story. But the Artemis 2 crew will select the final design, and then it'll actually be fabricated at NASA Goddard. So I'm excited to see this drawing come into like an actual plushie. So that's kind of fun.
Are they only going to be making one in order to send up there, or are they going to be mass produced? Because I would love to buy one and put it in.
I know, right? I think there's just one, but I feel like there's the opportunities are there.
And we've seen so many things fall out this year, not just in, you know, just straight NASA programs, but also in commercial space. We had our first successful commercial lunar lander and a few that attempted and missed. But I mean, come on, like the fact that we are now at this phase where it's not just space agencies, but also other organizations around the world that are finally beginning to get to do this kind of exploration, feels like we're opening up a door into a new age of space exploration.
Yeah. And I love the one thing about like Artemis is it's not just, you know, it's not just a NASA thing. There are, you've already mentioned the Artemis Accords where we're bringing this like global presence to the moon, which is kind of cool.
It really points to like the worldwide interest in the moon and how we're so connected with it as humanity.
Yeah, I would love to see people back on the moon, but also just to see more people from more walks of life represented up there, so more people feel like that is something they can relate to, that's something that they can aspire to. I mean, I know every little kid says, I want to go to the moon someday, but like we want every little kid to say that and really mean it.
Yeah.
So what are some of the ways that people can actually participate in this event? Because, you know, there are all kinds of things going on with public events, at, you know, home things you can do on the internet. What do you recommend?
So we have a registration page where you can share your event if you're hosting an event. There's a find an event page on the website that has posting of events you can join. We have a lunar live stream in case it's cloudy. So we were talking about that before, about how fog or cloudy weather can be the bane of astronomy, right? So you can view the live stream. But I want to encourage everyone to look up at the moon, whether that's by planning a community event, attending one of them, observing with your family and neighbors, or whether you're viewing the moon privately. And also let us know how you participate. Take some images or post on social media, write a poem, draw, collage, whatever is your medium, just so that we can see how our participants around the globe have been observing the moon. It's a really exciting time for us getting all of those feedback back to us. So
going back to the images, I think my favorite part about International Observe the Moon Night, well, maybe one of my favorite parts, is spending like the next, 2 days after the actual event date, browsing our Flickr page for event images. So we ask people who participate in International Observe the Moon Night to upload their event images, including where they observed from. So that can just be like the city and country, so that everyone all around the world can see how you participated. And it also is a great way to get some ideas for future events. I know last year there was a group that made space helmets, and they had a dog that got involved, which was very fun. So you can include your pets as well as other humans. So that's one of my favorite ways, is to browse our Flickr page for event images.
You know, I just learned the other day that Luna is the most popular cat name in the United States. So clearly, we need some Luna cat photos.
I have one of my coworkers, her dog's name is Luna. So it's perfect.
Well, we're sharing this early. Clearly, it's not October. We want to give people time to actually investigate events that they might want to be able to go to. But if people are interested in hosting an event, is there a timeline by which they should announce it and register it online?
So the registration is open. We do have actually on the YouTube channel a host webinar that we have for people who want to host, and it has all kinds of tips and resources and how do you want to evaluate your event, like so many different pieces that you can look and watch that YouTube video.
Yeah, I would also just say it depends on the size of the event, I guess. And if it's a public event, I would say register as soon as you can, just so that people are aware that you're hosting an event at a library or a museum or your university. If it's an individual participant, you can register on the day of. If you're cooking s'mores in your backyard with your family and you're observing the moon, you can also register on October 4th or, you know, anytime if you know you're going to be observing the moon. So I think the big thing would be if you're hosting a big public event, registering soon is good.
people can join other areas as well. Like, I know a lot of people will join their community art walk or just share the moon in other ways. So you can do that with lots of different organizations, and, you know, some people share the baseball game or community centers, all kinds of groups that you can connect with.
And if you're already planning an event, but it's not on International Observe the Moon Night or moon focused, you can always tie in the moon and then say, you know, hey, we're an event. We try not to make it difficult to participate in the program.
Yeah. I was just thinking I should drag out my telescope from my local apartment building and just, you know, even if it's just me, it doesn't hurt to register a small event and just share observing with the moon with some people in my local neighborhood.
Exactly.
That's perfect. And if you don't have a telescope, you can use your eyes or binoculars, or you can connect with your local amateur astronomy club. They have telescopes that they can share with you.
Which makes me think, too, you know, you guys have produced so many resources for this so that people know all the different ways that they can observe. What are some of the new things that you're most excited for to share with people so that they can find new ways for other people to connect with the moon?
So we have quite a few resources that we reuse every year, but then we update them. So one of them is our moon map. This is actually our most popular resource, and that's available on our website. It's actually an image of the moon, so what the moon will look like on October 4th, as well as some highlighted features that you can see on the moon, whether that be through like a telescope with your naked eye. There's some historic sites, so you could see the Apollo sites as well that might be visible on October 4th. So that's refreshed every year, but we do have a couple of new resources. One are some pop-up banner stands, so you can download them, print them, and put them up at your own event to try to, you know, have a nice visual appearance to your event. And then I think my new favorite resource would be our curated resources one pager, which is a little bit of a mouthful, but it's actually a document that's meant to be a one-stop shop for getting involved in the program. So we have a lot of resources available, and it can be a bit overwhelming, which is why I really like that product. So it's organized by topic and has a beautiful layout. Our graphic designer did a fabulous job with it. People can just print it out, put it in a display table stand, and then prop it up at the front desk at a museum, a library, or an institution. So I think that's my new favorite resource.
Well, there's so many different ways to observe the moon, but part of what I like about this event and some of your resources is that you're trying to expand this idea of what it means to observe, right? Not everyone is sighted. Not everyone can go outside and see the moon. If I took off my glasses, say, I'd have a hard time seeing some of those features, right? So what are some of the ways that people can observe and interact with the moon that might be something beyond just looking up at it?
We have a special page dedicated on our website to this very topic called 10 Ways to Observe the Moon, in addition to photos that people have submitted to our Flickr page where you can get some ideas. Some of my favorite other ways for observing the moon include eating my way through moon face cookies. Those are always fun. You start out with some cookies, you can mimic what the moon's phases look like, and then you can eat them. And that's an activity on our website as well. A few other ways have to do with the arts. So Teresa mentioned this already, but you can paint or sketch the moon. You can create a lunar poem, or you could create some moon tunes in like a song. And then you mentioned for folks that might have issues with sight, we also have 3D prints that you could feel the lunar surface. NASA has a 3D print portal where you can, if you have access to a 3D printer, I know some libraries have 3D printers, you can actually print your own lunar surface and then feel what the moon feels like, which is really fun.
You know, it's a really great way to do it. I previously worked at Griffith Observatory, and something that me and some of my coworkers like to do during big events, I remember we did it for the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, but also for things like solar eclipses and things like that, is to actually make the 3D prints and carry them on you. I know it's a little cumbersome to stick it in your pocket, but to have it with you when you're at these events to share with people so they can get a tactile feeling for the moon, even if you can look up at the moon, just it's a different way to experience it when you can actually feel the grooves of those craters with your fingers.
Yeah, I find a lot of those resources are good for sighted people and people who are blind or low vision, because that tactile sense just is something we don't pay attention to sometimes, and it can really give us better understanding.
We'll be right back after the short break.
This October, NASA needs you. Hi, I'm Jack Corelli, Director of Government Relations at the Planetary Society. In response to unprecedented proposed budget cuts to NASA's science programs, the Planetary Society and a coalition of our allies and partners are organizing a special Day of Action to save NASA science. Join us in person on October 5th and 6th in Washington, D.C. You'll receive training on effective advocacy from our team of space policy experts. Then head to the Hill to meet directly with your representatives in Congress to advocate for protecting NASA's science budget and ongoing missions. If you can't come to Washington, D.C., you can still pledge to take action online. We'll give you the resources you need to be part of the movement to save NASA science. This event is open to any U.S. resident, no experience required. Space science benefits all of humanity. Let's stand together to protect it. Registration is open now at planetary.org/dayofaction. We'll see you in Washington.
I'm sure you guys have some wonderful, you know, resources for people to learn how to throw these events, but what are some of those things that people can seek out if they want to learn how to do this? And what would you say are some of your biggest recommendations for throwing a good event like this?
I would go actually to two websites. Moon.nasa.gov leads right to the International Observe the Moon Night site that has all kinds of resources, including the moon map that Stacy was talking about earlier. Also, I was talking about the Night Sky Network previously, and I realized I didn't talk about what that was. The Night Sky Network is a collection of astronomy clubs across the country. I think we're just over 400 now. And so you can go there and put in your zip code and find events near you, and also find out where you can get the telescopes. That's what we were talking about also. But if you look under their resources section, there is, yeah, you just can put in the moon and you'll find scientific imagery showing what to look for on different phases, cultural tellings from different groups, viewing tips, activities that you could share at your library, school, spiritual meeting, community group, whatever. But it's a lot of resources that you can find and tailor to what you want to do.
And Stacy, I know you've done past outreach on this with all kinds of communities, ranging from senior centers to military families. And I know we've spoken a little bit about why the moon resonates with so many different people, but do you get like a similar reaction from all these different groups when you're sharing the moon with people, or are people relating to it in a different way?
Yes, I think everyone just loves the moon, which is amazing. I haven't had someone that said, oh no, I don't want to look at the moon. Are you kidding? Yeah, definitely. We want people to feel a sense of ownership of this event as well. So we provide a structure, we provide resources and tools to connect and to learn about and celebrate the moon. But we want people to take this event and make it their own based on these resources that they have available, as well as the needs of their specific audiences. So International Observe the Moon Night provides an opportunity for everyone, so you mentioned senior living communities to military families all around the world, to observe the moon. And the moon is great for this. As we've already mentioned, it's easy to see, even in light polluted skies. I just wanted to give a particular shout out to the military community. So my husband is in the Coast Guard, so we like to use this program as an opportunity to connect from afar. So even when he's deployed, we can still be connected by looking up at the same moon. And this goes for like military families or for single service members, or really for anyone. Anyone can be a part of this program, which is incredible. It's an incredible program to be involved with.
You just evoked a childhood memory for me. A movie called, I think it was an American Tale, the one about the mouse that gets separated from his family, and they sing that song about being under the same moon and the same sky. I didn't even recall that until this very moment. But really, though, there's something so romantic about the idea of seeing the same thing, but from a different place, and about the way that connects us. I love that so much.
the Astronomical Society of the Pacific and some folks from NASA did a program for the eclipse that just passed about working with people who were in prison and connecting them with their families and connecting them with the eclipse. And I think the sky can be something that can join people, whether they're near or far. And that's what's great about this international event.
I know, Teresa, you're super passionate about trying to make these kinds of things accessible to more people and also younger people. I you know, you worked on this program, Confidence and Curiosity, Girls at the Telescope. As someone who was once a young girl passionate about astronomy, who in many ways was dissuaded from trying to go into science, jokes on them, I did it anyway. But but what are you seeing in terms of young people and particularly people who might not see themselves in science as they connect to the moon?
For those of you who don't know, the Confidence and Curiosity Project was about connecting amateur astronomers with Girl Scouts. We made a whole series of new space science badges from kindergarten through 12th grade. And so the Girl Scouts would be coming to see the amateur astronomers. And so we wanted them to especially be welcoming. Science can be exclusionary sometimes, and so connecting with the people that are in front of us, young or old, is very important. Being a welcoming presence can be a countermeasure to the discouragement that we feel. It's really important to connect with those younger people who've been excluded from science. And one of the ways that it helps is having these touchstones, or I call them wonderful astronomy experiences, you know, that makes you feel like, oh, astronomy is for me, in spite of other people who might have said the opposite. Like, so observing the moon or having that connection to the moon can be one of those touchstones. And as we mentioned before, astronomy is the entryway for all different kinds of STEM and science and even doing more astronomy. So, yeah, as the moon being visible to everybody worldwide, it's huge that we can see that connection and nearly every day.
That would have meant so much to me as a young Girl Scout. You know, I was a Girl Scout for many years, all the way up through Senior Scouts. I remember at the time it was like a single astronomy badge. And to know that through this program, you've expanded it out into even more. That is so much fun. And I would have lost my little mind over that.
I'm so glad. We have had lots of really good stories from Girl Scouts and Girl Scout leaders who have been dissuaded from science and now feel like a little bit more included. So it means a lot to me.
Oh, that makes me so happy to hear. This isn't just an event that happens in the United States. It happens all around the world. What are both of your favorite kind of stories of the impact that you've seen coming out of this from different locations and different events?
You know, we work with the astronomy clubs at the Astronomical Society of the Pacific all the time. And so, but one of my favorites was Oklahoma City a few years back did an International Observe the Moon Night event at a carnival. And with all the bright lights, it was kind of hard to see. So what they did was project an image of the moon on the ground. And basically, everyone got the chance to be an astronaut and walk on the moon because it was just there, right there. And I think people are so creative, and that is so encouraging to see how people take this event and make it their own.
And I'll just add, I know in the year 2020, it was a big year for everyone around the world. And it made people kind of adjust what types of in-person events they were able to host. So on that year's particular Flickr page, it was very entertaining to look at people's creativity. And one of our participants from, I think it was from Brazil, they actually had a drive-in moon theater. So they had a bunch of cars in a parking lot and then a pop-up projector with the moon on it for people to observe and participate from socially distanced, safe distances. Yeah, that was one of mine that I, one memory that I remember seeing on our Flickr page. I was like, oh, this is lovely. I love that people are so creative. And I would not have thought of that.
That's so clever. What are some of the most, you know, surprising or inspiring places around the world that you've seen people host events for this?
Well, you know, we have people in Arctic stations, like, yes. Research there, and they look up at the moon, and that's very inspiring to me.
I agree. That's a fun spot. We also, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, I think a most surprising and inspiring place that I've seen people participate would be in war-torn countries. We've had registrants in Ukraine and Israel in the past, and I think that's incredible. It's amazing to see people all around the world wanting to join in.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories from Bill Nye, since I know you guys are fans, but you know, I was speaking with him earlier this year about kind of how he got into astronomy, and he was telling me the story about how his father was a prisoner of war in World War II, and it was his observation of the night sky because they didn't have electricity. So everyone that was stuck in that prison camp was looking at the sky together, and he passed that love of space on to his son. And in some way, that's how that all happened and how I'm here and how so many science educators around the world began their careers watching him. So who knows how many people out there are going through difficult times and looking up at the moon as a form of solace and connection to others.
Yeah.
That's so important right now. Our world is having so many crises, and to be able to take a moment to take a breath and see the moon and know that we're part of something bigger than our struggles.
Well, I know that right now funding is a little interesting with NASA. We have some interesting budgetary times, but everything going perfectly well, how would you see Observe the Moon Night evolving in years to come?
Funding aside, as the former International Partnerships Coordinator, I would love to see the program continue to expand all over the globe. I know we have a few missing places on our map, so I'd like to get more involved with the more international partners and contributors, and I hope that people continue participating in the program and taking the resources we provide to help create their own unique experiences and events. This is such an incredible program that started out small, but has now grown to become its own being, so to speak. So there won't be a shortage of lunar news to keep up on. So International Observe the Moon Night will be a great opportunity to keep involved and to keep up to date.
What are you both actually going to be doing on Observe the Moon Night? Do you have plans?
I will hopefully maybe be in Alabama supporting the U.S. Space and Rocket Center's International Observe the Moon Night event that's coordinated through Marshall Space Flight Center. And then I'm also hopefully going to be able to tune in to the International Astronomical Union's Office for Astronomy Outreach. They're hosting a 24-hour live stream in honor of the 100 Hours of Astronomy. So we're doing a sort of collaboration. So I'm going to talk about International Observe the Moon Night on the morning of International Observe the Moon Night, I believe. It's based in Japan time, so time zones are a little crazy.
Yeah. Well, I'm not doing anything as far-reaching as Stacey is, but I do live in an apartment complex that has several different common areas. And so I'll probably be looking at the moon there with my family and whoever happens to come along.
Awesome. What are you going to be doing, Sarah?
Oh, man. Well, I know so many of our Planetary Society members and a lot of our staff are going to be in Washington, D.C. around that time talking to Congress about space and trying to advocate for these programs. I personally, though, am going to be back here preparing for a different event. So I think what I'll probably do is pull out the telescope, show my neighbors the moon, and maybe I'll get waylaid by some of my observatory friends asking me to go up to Griffith or something. But one way or the other, I'm going to find some way to go out there and look up at the moon.
Yes.
And I would ask, you know, I'm sure everybody listening to the show is passionate about this and is probably going to remember this and put it on their calendar and go out and do this. But for people who have never taken part in this, or if, you know, say you're trying to drag your teenage kid out of the house to go look at the moon, what would you say to these people? Why would you say that they should become a part of this moment to go look at the moon right now?
We were talking a little bit earlier about inspiration that the world needs right now. This is really a global event, and I feel like it's such a wonderful way to connect with the world and to feel like you're participating in something bigger than yourself. So for me, the international piece is huge. Stacey, what do you think?
I would agree with you, Teresa, and I would just say, Jump on in and join us. Come be a part of this global collective experience of observing and learning about our nearest celestial neighbor in space. It's such an amazing experience to observe the moon and to know that you are observing with people all around the world on the same day. And then I'm just going to give a reminder to don't forget to register so that you can be a pop-up on our map and make sure you're included in our global participation map with everyone else who's also observing the moon.
And we've talked about all kinds of events, like whether, stadiums full of people or whether it's in your local library or just yourself. Anyone can do this and you don't need a telescope. You just need your excitement and share it with the website so that we know, we know that you've done an event and can count you towards the millions of people that are observing the moon that night.
Part of what I love about observing the moon and moments like this is not just that we're all looking up at the moon together, but it makes me think about the legacy of people for thousands and thousands of years who have shared this moment of looking up at the moon together. And it brings up a memory for me of something my mom said when she watched the moon landing when she was a very young child. She was in that room with her mom and her grandma and her great-grandma. And her great-grandma said to her, "I came across this country in a covered wagon, and now I'm watching someone walk around on the moon." And I think about the way that that resonates for me and for all of humanity across all of the ages. And I'm so glad that we have a moment like this to truly appreciate our closest celestial neighbor and this other world, because who knows who might be inspired in this moment. There's got to be at least one person out there that looks up at that moon and thinks, "I'm going to go there someday." Well, thank you so much for both being here and for sharing this with everyone and for putting so much love and effort into this event. I know it's a global thing, but it's a small crew, a small but mighty crew that's running this. And the people that run this, you deserve the appreciation because you're behind the scenes bringing so much joy to so many people.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Thanks for this opportunity. And go International Observe the Moon Night.
Yeah, we're very happy to share it with you. And hopefully some of your listeners will join us.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And I hope you all have beautiful, clear skies on October 4th. While we're celebrating our moon, it's also a perfect moment to look outward at the amazing diversity of moons across our solar system. Almost every planet has at least one, yet many remain mysterious to us. To help us explore these otherworldly neighbors, I'm joined by Kate Howes, public education specialist at the Planetary Society, whose new book called Moons, The Mysteries and Marvels of Our Solar System, takes readers on an interplanetary journey. From the volcanic landscape of Io to the ice mountains and methane seas of Titan, Kate's book combines stunning photography, imaginative illustrations, and fascinating facts to showcase just how majestic and downright strange moons can be. Hey, Kate, welcome back.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
So in this moment, we're talking about all the ways that humanity can connect with our moon. And I know I've had so many beautiful nights just outside staring up at the moon, and having that world so close by has always been so inspiring. But as our technology has advanced, we've been able to see moons all around the solar system. So I'm really glad that we can take the time to not just observe and appreciate our own kind of celestial neighbor, but also take a moment to appreciate all of those other awesome moons that are in our solar system.
Absolutely. They are, in my opinion, even cooler than the planets.
I mean, honestly, though, when you think about it, the planets are great. But most of the places that we know where there's habitability, or most of the terrestrial worlds other than, you know, asteroids, I don't want to go bouncing around on one of those. But there's so many places in our solar system that we can explore. And I think not as many people are aware of how many cool moons there are out there.
Yeah, that was a big part of why I wrote this book, is that I think moons are the low-hanging fruit right now for people who are kind of interested in space but don't know a whole lot. I know that when I first was learning about space as an adult, I didn't really know anything about any of the moons of the solar system. And when I found out, it was actually from reading Cosmos by Carl Sagan that I learned about what Voyager 1 and 2 learned about the moons of Jupiter and Saturn. I was blown away. I was like, how are there all these really cool worlds that I was never taught about? Because you only really learn about the planets if you're not in like a, you know, science program in school.
It's so true. I mean, I had seen some images from Voyager as a kid, but it didn't really connect with me until I was literally playing a video game. It was the Magic School Bus Tours the Solar System. And they explained Io. It was specifically Io and all the volcanoes. And I was completely blown away. What would you say are some of the moons that are more underappreciated at this time?
Well, okay, controversial answer, but I would say Earth's moon is one of, for me at least, that was one that I always thought was pretty boring because I had learned about Io with its volcanoes and Europa with its subsurface ocean and Titan, which has, you know, lakes and seas of liquid methane, all these really cool, exciting, dramatic moons. And I thought about Earth's moon, I was like, it's just a gray rock. It's dead. There's no water. There's not much going on. And it was actually when I was researching for this book that I really dove more deeply into Earth's moon's history and how it formed and what's still going on there and what we've learned from it and even learning more about human exploration of the moon. It is way underappreciated because it's kind of outshone by the flashier moons, but it's a real sort of sleeper, cool world.
So this book was distributed in other nations before it finally became more broadly available in the United States and other places in Canada. As you've had people reading this book before, have you had any people coming to you and having echoes of this feeling of connection to those worlds, something similar to the way that humanity sees our own moon?
Yeah, definitely. I've gotten some great feedback from people. It came out in Australia first, so that's where my publisher is based, and that's where it's been available for the last year or so. And yeah, I've gotten some really great feedback, especially from young people who are just starting to learn about and become passionate about space. You know, even if you're just starting to learn, you do start to first hear about the big flashy ones like Io and Europa, but just learning that basically every planet out there, not every single one, but most planets in the solar system have moons, and that we're discovering more all the time, that exoplanets have moons. And then once you start to realize the sheer number of worlds that are out there and the possibilities and the diversity that must exist out there, I've heard from people that they share that sort of expansion of the mind that happens when you realize just how much is out there and even just how much is here in our solar system.
It's a very visual book. What was the process like of trying to find beautiful images to go with this? And why did you want to prioritize so much of the visual imagery behind these moons?
Well, I think images are the most accessible form of information for people. So it's the hook that gets a lot of people interested in the first place. Even as somebody who likes, you know, the science, the data, the specifics, I still just can't get enough of space imagery. So it was a no-brainer to have the book be heavily focused on images. Choosing was difficult because there are so many. It just kind of came down to personal preferences and availability of high resolution images. In some cases, we had to give a slightly grainy picture just because it really showed something that you can't see any other way. And then I had one of my good friends and frequent collaborators, Gordon Auld, did some custom illustrations for the things that we can't see, but that we know are out there, like the subsurface ocean of moon-like Europa. So Gordon did beautiful illustrations of what that might look like based on the science that we have, but also with, you know, a healthy injection of imagination. And I just love that this, I think it makes the book more accessible and it gives people the chance to even just flip through. Even if you don't read anything, you can flip through and you can see these pictures and get a sense of the sort of majesty and the beauty and the diversity of what's out there.
Yeah, you picked such gorgeous imagery for this, and some that are really fairly new. I mean, even the Juno images of Io, you managed to get in there. But what's really amazing to me is that even with everything we know about the solar system, since you published this book, we've, even since then, discovered new moons. And
yeah,
that's just, that's so funny. And it just, it speaks to this moment in human history that we've learned so much. But even in this short amount of time, things have changed.
Yeah, absolutely. So in fact, when the book was being re-released in North America, I wrote to the publisher saying, can I add some updates? Can I change some things? And I wasn't able to because it was already printed. But it's a very fast moving field. And I do address that in the book, that by the time you read this, the numbers will have changed, new discoveries will have been made. And I think that's part of what is so cool about planetary science in general, is that it is always evolving. We're always making new discoveries. You don't want to write a book about space and have it still be perfectly accurate in 20 years, right? So it's nice to know that some of this stuff is going to be obsolete by the time, you know, future generations pick up this old tome at their library.
Wouldn't that be amazing if in like 100 years someone picks up the book and goes, wow, they didn't know about Gleep Glorp or some weird moon or something, you know, it would just be so magical. It's the same way I think about the images of Voyager when I pick up those old books from 40 years ago. It's just a beautiful reflection of where we are at this point in time. Are you doing anything fun for Observe the Moon Night?
I'm going to be in Scotland in the Highlands with my family, and so hopefully I will have nice clear skies and I can look up at the moon and tell my friends and family some things about our little cosmic companion. I'm hoping for some good clear skies out there. I don't know if I will get them because it's quite rainy, but we'll see.
That is something, you know, with Observe the Moon Night. Even if you can't see it where you're from, you know, the whole world is looking up from other locations. And in the event that they can't look at our own moon, they can always attempt to get your book and see other moons. Where is it now available?
The book is now available in bookstores across North America. So I always encourage people to support their local independent booksellers so local stores can order it in. If you absolutely must, you can buy it on Amazon, but I definitely encourage supporting local.
Heck yeah. Well, thanks for writing this book. I absolutely loved it when I got to see it, and I'm so excited that it's available more broadly because now I can get my own copy. And if you would, the next time you see me, I would love if you would sign it.
Absolutely. I have a silver Sharpie specifically for signing the sort of dark, spacey pages of these books.
Well, thanks so much, Kate. Have a beautiful time on your next adventure. I hope you get clear skies. The prayer of all astronomers.
Thank you. And happy International Observe the Moon Night to everyone.
From our own moon to the many strange and beautiful moons across our solar system, there's always more to explore. And of course, one of the best ways to celebrate International Observe the Moon Night is to step outside and see the sky for yourself. To help us get ready, I'm joined by the Planetary Society's chief scientist, Bruce Betts, for What's Up. He'll give us a little guide to what we can spot on the moon with the naked eye during the first quarter moon. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, Sarah. Hi. How you doing?
I mean, busy week for me right now. We're recording this beforehand, obviously, but I'm going to be hosting the webcast for NASA's Innovative Advanced Concept Symposium, which I'll share later on the show. But right now, as people are listening to this, I am in full hosting mode. So preparing for that.
Excellent.
I know.
Be in hosting mode.
Serious business. But also, I'm glad that this is the first time we've gotten an opportunity to really share more about International Observe the Moon Night, because I love this kind of romantic vision of all of humanity observing our closest world together at the same time. There's just something really beautiful about that.
No, it is neat. When I pause to be more positive and profound, that's one of the things that brings everyone together, is that, yeah, the sky looks different from where you are, but fundamentally, wherever you are on the earth, night comes and you're looking up at the same sky as at least half the earth and similar sky to others, and there's a connection. So people thousands of kilometers away are looking at the moon when you're looking at the moon, and that's just kind of trippy.
What I'm really surprised at, like, I've participated in International Observe the Moon Night before, but I wasn't aware until I was researching for this episode just how many people get involved. It's literally millions of people all around the world at this point. And many of those people might be in places where they don't have access to a telescope. Or as we said in this conversation, some people are in war-torn places looking up at the moon and trying to find solace there. And I want to give people a little bit of an idea of things that they can see on the moon without having fancy things like a telescope. And you've done What's Up for ages, mostly about what's actually up in the night sky. So what are some things on the moon that people can see with just the naked eye during this event?
The basic thing you can look for with the naked eye is the dichotomy in terrains on the surface of the moon. So you look, and I'm sure you've seen it before, but really stare and look for the dark areas and the bright areas, because basically you've got bright areas that were initially formed, and then you had big asteroids and comets slamming into the moon, making craters all over the place, including really huge basins that then got filled in by dark lava. And so think Hawaiian Islands, dark lava. And so basically you're seeing the lava that, if you were able to look with a telescope, you would see has far fewer craters, meaning it's younger in geologic age than the surrounding bright areas, which are typically called the highlands, because they're typically higher than the where the mare, the dark areas, have flowed in. So if you look, you can, it's a first quarter moon, I guess. So you see, which of course there's the confusing, first quarter moon means you can see half of one side of the moon, which technically is a quarter of the moon. And it's quarter way around from new moon to full moon. But you're going to be looking at half of the side of the moon we see lit up. And that half includes several of the mare, especially up towards one side. So you've got Mare Crisium and Fecunditatis. And then we've got Mare Tranquillitatis, which is tranquility, as in Apollo 11, tranquility base here.
Wait, so that means that people who are looking up at the moon will be able to see the location where those first people walked on the moon, essentially.
Yes, they will. And in fact, I guess you will provide them with links to the cool resources we've got, including maps of the moon identifying these things. And if you look, we probably have the Latin version, Mare Tranquillitatis, which I'm sure is pronounced wrong by me, but is the Sea of Tranquility. Mare means sea in Latin. I'm going with Latin. And so you have these different things, because way back when, other people without telescopes thought, hey, we have oceans. Those are probably oceans. And we'll call them seas. And the name has stuck, even though now we know they're solid rock lava. I mean, that's kind of, to me, the basics that you look for with naked eye.
Are you going to be doing anything for Observe the Moon Night?
If I can recall, no. I will go out and observe the moon, but from my hovel. I'm guessing the moon's going to be there. I look forward to seeing it. And remember, if you do, you don't need a telescope to get an optical improvement. If you've got a pair of binoculars, they're actually great for observing the moon. If you've got a telescope, hey, go crazy. But the binoculars will do you well as just staring at the moon and enjoying the moon.
What's our random space fact this week?
Well, it is a random space fact. It was half inspired by you not that long ago, because we were looking at, you were telling me that Mare Crisium is the Sea of Crises. And then you pointed out it's right next to the Sea of Tranquility. And I think that alone is a profound statement of some kind. But if nothing else, it's just kind of funny to me. I don't know how that relates to, I guess the crises are closer to the fertility, the fecundity. So, yeah, I don't know what all that means. Anyway, there it is. That's what I'm giving you.
Well, I wish you beautiful open skies for Observe the Moon Night. And if not, a good webcast.
And remember, if it's cloudy, the moon will be back the next night. All right, everybody, go out there, look up the night sky, and for gosh darn sake, think about tranquility. Thank you and good night.
We've reached the end of this week's episode of Planetary Radio, but we'll be back next week with more space science and exploration. If you love the show, you can get Planetary Radio t-shirts at planetary.org/shop, along with lots of other cool spacey merchandise. Help others discover the passion, beauty, and joy of space science and exploration by leaving a review and a rating on platforms like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Your feedback not only brightens our day, but helps other curious minds find their place in space through Planetary Radio. You can also send us your space thoughts, questions, and poetry at our email, planetaryradio@planetary.org. Or if you're a Planetary Society member, leave a comment in the Planetary Radio space in our member community app. I would love to see your moon images after the event. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by our moon-loving members all around the world. you can join us and celebrate the joy of space at planetary.org/join. Mark Hilverda and Ray Paletta are our associate producers. Casey Dreyer is the host of our monthly Space Policy Edition, and Matt Kaplan hosts our monthly Book Club Edition. Andrew Lucas is our audio editor. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which is arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. I'm Sarah Al-Ahmed, the host and producer of Planetary Radio. And until next week, Ad Astra and happy observing.